Okay, sure. Yeah, we can start. I will do the roll call. Lisa Gillis.
Here.
Eric Simon.
Here.
Beth Chang.
Here, and I'm going to go on mute too because I forgot my son's having his piano lesson at the same time, so.
All right. Carrie McLean.
Here.
Susan Charette. Shannon Roberts.
Susan's here.
Here.
There she is.
Oh, okay.
She was here.
Lauren Behan.
Here.
Ellie Raitt.
Here.
Charlotte Meyer.
Here.
Luke Gilfillan.
Here.
Charles Roger.
Okay.
Not here. Okay, and I don't know if anyone saw the several emails I sent that were public comment. They were all related to the leaf blower issue.
I know. So, I know. Yeah. That's my fault, I guess, because of the way I put it on the agenda. Although we had it on the agenda last go round. Do we read them in, or can we just accept them in? How does the public comment thing work? And I don't know, is anybody? I know, Catherine, you're here as part of the public. Is there anybody else, or should I can quickly like kind of skim them if that makes sense, or do I have to read them?
We should really also share them with the Board of Trustees.
We will. I think that gets into when we provide our final document. We'll include all of the comments that we've received. But I can quickly kind of go through them and summarize right. Kind of what some of the things have been said.
Yeah, I think that would be okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I'm happy to read them into the record if we need to be. And these are not in any particular order because I did try to kind of open them thinking maybe that I would have to do this, but one was received this morning at 10:29 from Mary and Steve McGregor who live at 1228 Franklin. This is what I'll just read. My husband and I do not support banning powered leaf blowers. We are elderly and have a lawn service, provide for our yard work and snow removal. The leaf blowers have been here for decades with no mass complaint until COVID-19 when folks started working from home. The impact to lawn services or anyone unable to rake or residents with large properties would be huge. With a lawn service charging $20 or more per man hour, the cost of keeping our properties tidy would soar, not to mention the burden on services to hire more people to rake. This proposal is foolish. So that's one. Second is from Mary Fitch, who sent it something at 1:36 p.m. Good morning, I feel very strongly that we should not limit the owner's use of gas-powered leaf blowers. We work very hard on our landscaping as we are very proud of it. I do not want to be told how to manage our property. Then we have one from McAdam. So Rob McAdam wrote one. So this would be from a landscaper. I just learned today of a meeting being held this evening by the Sustainability Commission that may determine whether or not to impose a ban on the use of gas-powered leaf blowers. I have not heard anything about this, nor have I seen any information on this prior to learning this morning of a meeting tonight. As a resident and landscape contractor, I am opposed to a ban. The use of blowers allows for efficient removal of leaves and general cleanup of landscape debris. Landscape contractors are not the only companies that use leaf blowers. Arborists and tree removal companies, parking lot maintenance companies, asphalt and paving companies use them to mention a few. In addition, the parks district uses blowers in maintaining our parks. And last but not least, I think this is the last one. Johnny, you might have to confirm for me. And this is from Laura Stamp at 910 Keystone. She has already also written to the board. And I communicated with her also on Facebook today because she wanted to, and I don't know what you do with this, John, if it's anything to worry about, but she was basically saying that she had no idea how to get in contact with the Sustainability Commission nor find any of the materials for the meeting. So I did forward her the link to the meeting materials and I introduced myself as kind of the chair.
What materials was she looking for? Just the agenda and packet that?
Yeah, okay. That kind of thing.
Yeah, it's on that calendar. But
I know. Okay. I forwarded it to her, and I think Janet Sager, who's a resident, has done it as well. Hers is a little longer, but since I read all the others, I might as well read this one. When I was a child in the 70s, we raked our leaves and burned them. The smell of burning leaves was integral to our autumn experience as Halloween. When the EPA determined that burning leaves was contributing to air pollution, we stopped that practice and began to compost and bag our leaves. When we know better, we do better. Now we are learning that almost every part of our practice of gathering our leaves just to dispose of them is harmful to us and to wildlife. It's time for a change again. Leave the Leaves is a rallying cry from scientists who are studying the impending insect apocalypse. Predictions of a 40% drop in insect populations may seem overblown or inconsequential, but the loss of our pollinators will have a devastating effect on our food supply. The loss of the base of the food chain will have a devastating effect on the birds and other species that share our earth. Leaving the leaves provides habitat for a number of native bee and butterfly species to overwinter. When we scrape our lawn free of leaves, we diminish the chances we will see swallowtail and checker spot butterflies, for example, in the spring. Just the simple act of raking the leaves off of our grass to spend the winter under shrubs and bushes can have a positive effect on the insect population, or I should say on insect populations. Another part of gathering leaves that has become ubiquitous is the use of gas-powered leaf blowers. It's not just anecdotal evidence that leaf blowers can be heard in river forest for as much as 8 hours a day and almost every day of the week during the summer and fall. While I was teaching from my house this year, I recorded short 15-second videos every hour to document the constant noise. According to the Sierra Club, in 2017, the Center of Disease Control and Prevention reported leaf blowers create a common noise that can contribute to permanent hearing loss. Additionally, noise pollution can cause stress, headaches, difficulty sleeping, productivity loss, higher heart attack rates, and more. The noise is also linked to Alzheimer's disease. Even without the serious health effects, just hearing the noise constantly diminishes the enjoyment of our lovely community. We work so hard to have beautiful lawns, yards, that we can't enjoy over the constant din of leaf blowers. It's not just humans that suffer from the excess noise. The Audubon Naturalist Society states that growing scientific evidence shows the harm that excessive noise does to birds and other wildlife by making it harder for them to hear each other's calls, listen for predators, and find prey or other food. It elevates their stress hormones and causes them to change behavior, like changing the pitch of their vocalizations or moving out of their habitats. The final blow to the use of leaf blowers is their contribution to air pollution. The emissions of a two-stroke gas motor is well known. The increase in particulates is devastating to people with asthma and other respiratory issues. The same pollution is not allowed from cars or other vehicles. It is unclear why the use of leaf blowers is still allowed when there are viable alternatives. The argument that using rakes or electric rechargeable leaf blowers is cost prohibitive is short-sighted. The long-term cost of the greenhouse gases that are released and harmful particulates that we breathe need to be taken into account. In addition, we need to consider the health of the workers who are subject to the noise and pollution every day. Changing the technology is also a matter of environmental justice for the people who do much of the lawn work in river forest. It is time for a change. We need to join other communities like Washington, DC and Palm Springs, California to phase out the use of gas-powered leaf blowers. We can work with landscaping companies to make this change and educate our citizens on the many benefits of getting rid of this outdated, harmful technology. And then she, basically there are a number of data sources that she has cited. So is that all of them?
Yes, that's all.
Okay.
That's all that I received.
Great. Okay. So obviously, I mean, we'll get to, why don't we wait till that part of the agenda and we can go through it. We move on to adoption of the minutes.
Yes, do we have a motion to adapt?
I just at one point, when I looked at it, it looked like Catherine Rader was not listed as a participant last month.
She is actually a member of public comments. She is, and we'll get into that a bit in a bit, as a resident volunteer. She is, you know, part of our public.
Okay.
So I don't know if we, Catherine, I don't, you know, and again, that's why I feel like we have to clarify kind of our participation as we grow our ranks, because there is a difference in terms of the different folks that are engaged. Perhaps we need to just note Catherine as a, you know, kind of key member of the public who attends and participates and contributes greatly to our efforts. With that update, do I have a motion, I guess, to accept the meeting minutes?
Motion to accept.
Second.
Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Okay. So now, why don't we move on to commissioner reports? As always, I will, you know, I will happily take volunteers.
I'll go first. I guess I tend to. Okay. So the update is that our waste subgroup is working on some short informational educational videos that we're planning to have complete ahead of the week of Earth Day. So that we can, you know, have them posted and then hopefully distributed through social media throughout that week. So the intent is, you know, friendly, neighborly reminders of, well, different aspects of waste. We're gonna, you know, cover composting, recycling, garbage in general. And a lot of resources for just reducing waste in general. So that's our plan. We're working towards it. And I definitely don't want to film anything until the snow is off the ground. So, oh my God, I'm sorry. Sorry about the phone ringing. So that's where we're at.
Well, thank you. I'm very excited about that subgroup. I think that
Me too.
And I'm sure that, you know, it gets into education about waste diversion, which is an important thing for us to continue to do. So I thank you. And who, like, just remind us who's on your subgroup.
So Charlotte, Luke, and Catherine.
Yay. Go team. He's
right.
Lisa, can I ask if we can move up Meatless Mondays? Ellie has to leave for another phone call at some point earlier.
Yeah, we can move it up to be first after we get through. Once we get through the commissioner reports, we can do it first. How's that?
Sure.
I can go next. I guess the only thing I have to report on it since the last meeting is that I did review one of the climate action plans, which Susan had discussed last time that we could take a look at. So I looked at Ann Arbor's slide presentation and listen to their sustainability coordinators talk about it. I haven't read the entire 138 climate action plan, but I think what I'll just share with the group is that I think looking at other communities' climate action plans can just help us put our own plan that we have in context and maybe give us ideas for how we can continue to improve it. We didn't officially call ours a climate action plan, but it's the same concept really, because our goal is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And we have a strategy and a series of, you know, programs and priorities. But what's interesting about the Ann Arbor plan, first of all, they're just operating on a much bigger scale than we are, right? They have a lot more levers that they can pull, and they also have a paid sustainability person on staff, and they have a budget of money to actually carry things out, which their sustainability coordinator said was only $880,000 a year. So they're at a completely different scale, but that doesn't mean that we can't learn something from them. In particular, I would say some things that stand out are one is a reminder about the importance of partnership, which we already, you know, we do have that in our plan. We have people who are supposed to be in touch with different institutions, but over time, maybe we can look at how we can, you know, move those even to like a higher level of even strategic partnership instead of just partnering on programs. That's one thing. Another thing they do, which I'm not sure how it fits in our community but it is something that's not mentioned in our plan, and that is kind of notions of environmental justice and factoring that into decision making. And I would say the third big takeaway is just that they're able to really drill down to very specific metrics and things to say, like, okay, we want to reduce vehicle miles traveled by 50% by such and such a date. And we have that sort of thing in a handful of places, but a lot of our goals are still not quantified that way. And I think that's, you know, the work to build on for me and Shannon's work with the baseline inventory is, I don't have any idea how we get to, you know, net zero, but since we said we're going to do it, that's something to aspire to, I guess, is more quantification. And Shannon, I know that our goal was to start putting those goals and metrics associated with each program, and we just kind of got off on pause with that, I would say, this past year with COVID, because many of the programs were not able to roll out in the way that we expected. So that's the perpetual question I think we have, right? Is, we can quantify it, but I don't know if we put in X many, you know, more cubic yards or square feet of pollinator gardens, how much that really reduces greenhouse gas emissions. So Shannon, I know that that's kind of like our next step. Now that we have the baseline, is to figure out changes in behavior or actions that we put in place, how do we quantify? So I think there's a lot to be learned by looking at other plans, but we also have to be realistic, I guess, about what we can do here in River Forest. So I look forward to seeing more plans, just to keep learning. And Susan, you know, when you do your report, please add anything I may have left out.
I have a question, and this is, I don't know, like, again, like, I'm trying to make sure I'm doing things kind of in the right order. If we know Ellie has to go, can we actually just have Ellie and those guys go and pull their Meatless Monday into their comments, or is that like a faux pas? And that's my phone going up, my work phone.
No, you can move it up.
Okay. Do you guys mind if then we move it up? Because I know Ellie wants to go. She's going to water polo. She's got another thing that she's going to do. Okay.
Although her Wi-Fi was bad, so she just kicked off.
Yeah, she said she's going to come back. So as soon as she comes back, we'll kind of switch. Okay. How's that?
There she is.
Hey, Ellie. Hi, can you hear us? Ellie?
Yeah, I can hear now. All the audio is cutting.
Okay. What we decided to do, because and we've, you know, we're just going to go a little bit of out of order. So if you guys want to talk about Meatless Monday, so given that you have to go, why don't we do that? Then we can go back to comments and kind of continue that way. Is that okay? With the Meatless Monday crew?
That's good. Yeah.
Ellie, do you want to talk?
Sure.
I'll share my screen to just show that little document.
Okay. So we decided that our first step is to get some contact information for different restaurants around River Forest and Oak Park, just to gather it up and see who would be open to doing a Meatless Mondays program. So I got Buzz Cafe, Maya Del Sol, Delia's Kitchen, and Cucina Paradiso. And I'm not sure yet what they're gonna respond with, but we'll see. And then Terry?
Where we're at is, after we saw the River Forest community efforts for Chicago restaurants on those three Thursdays that are coming up, I think in February, we really decided to focus on our community restaurants. So our, you know, Elmwood Park, Forest Park, Oak Park, River Forest restaurants. And Charles set up a Google Doc, and we're gonna contact all of the restaurants and talk to them about this Meatless Mondays. Now, there's one little caveat that I'm going to stop sharing, that I just came across. I called Little Gem. We eat from them a lot on Monday, and they were closed. So I think a lot of restaurants tend to be closed on Mondays. I'm not sure. So Ellie, I haven't talked to you about this or Charles, but I didn't know how we thought of it. This is gonna be a little wacky. Vegetarian Wednesdays. You know, if we do something a little cheeky, but I would hate to leave out restaurants just because they're closed on Mondays, which is a really big thing to have restaurants closed on Mondays. So this might be something that we talk about, Ellie and Charles and I don't know, but
another idea would be Lent is coming up in a week and some people don't eat meat on Fridays. So that might be.
I think if that's a natural thing, if we can get them to do another day, that would be really good.
Thing, if, Monday, if Monday is proving hard, then you know you might want to kick in a Friday for a while. Just to
what I think would be the most optimal thing, if we could highlight one or two restaurants a month that might have a special on that day. And, you know, Fridays might be a normal day where people eat out, where Mondays or Wednesdays may not be, to, you know, to give them an incentive to do something on maybe more of an off day. Lisa did say that we do have to run this by the board because I don't think that they know of any of these efforts to make sure that they are, you know, they give us their blessings for all of this. But outside of that, those are our plans and hopefully we can start promoting them fairly soon. So I don't know.
Have you reached out to Munch in Oak Park?
Yeah, Munch is on the list of, yeah. We'll contact every restaurant that we can think of outside of McDonald's, you know, and places like that. But do you have any thoughts? Like, should we still just concentrate on Mondays or should we bring that into the mix or I don't know. So I don't know, Ellie, did you?
Meat free Fridays totally works. And I know that there are places like Johnny's Beef that does
meat free Fridays.
Like Johnny's does pepper and egg on every Friday to have a meatless option. They've been doing that for decades, I think, but.
I don't know. So maybe that's something that Ellie and Charles and I will talk about and see. I don't know how many you've contacted some already, right, Ellie? And they were all set for Mondays, or I don't know if it really matters. If they're set for the concept, that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I can let you know what I told them. None of them have responded yet because I just sent it out yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Mm-hmm. I think that you could probably do something like meatless Mondays or meat-free Fridays. I mean, I think you could probably figure out a nice way to do both. I do think that Lauren had a great idea with that. I do think that it's a good thing to do because we are also trying to, from a, you know, if you think about the pandemic and the fact that restaurants are suffering, it does have that extra thing that will help. And the village is highlighting all of the local businesses. So it would be good to really see if we can get, okay, Susan La
Paradilla.
Right, to see if, you know, like if we could at least get all of, and I can't say it, it's like one of those things that a million years you can tell me and I probably won't get it. So, and I took Spanish in high school.
If you said Paradilla, everybody would know what you were talking about.
Oh, really? La Parida? They would?
Yeah, I think. If you got close, okay. People would know. Yeah.
But anyway, I think we should also really just try if we can kind of make sure we cover the River Forest restaurants too.
Oh,
and I know we're going to go beyond. And did was the list I gave you helpful? At least
I think there were three restaurants on there. So yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, I think we'll spend these next, pardon me?
We don't have that many restaurants in this town.
Right. Yeah. So, but we'll spend these next couple weeks, emailing all the restaurants to see who might, you know, we just need a few to start this.
You have Gaetano's on there?
It's just Gaetano's right. Would be on there.
Okay, it's just right across the
street. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good job.
So that's kind of where we're at. So, yeah, that's where we're at with that.
Okay, can you and remind me your committee?
It's Ellie, Charles, and myself.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good job. Thank you. Okay. So why don't we go back to commissioner comments? Carrie, do you want to continue with commissioner comments?
With the Midwest Grows Green?
Yeah, and Healthy Lawn, Healthy Family, whatever meetings you've had. I mean, the commissioner comments is to highlight, you know, kind of what you've done.
Yeah, so the Healthy Lawn, Healthy Families, I have my letter rewritten for the spring letter, but it dovetails with the Midwest Grows Green. We're going to do a live webinar on Saturday, April 10th at 2:00, the one that we were thinking of doing last year via the library. We're going to do that in April. So it would be David Murphy from Deep Roots and Ryan Anderson and Vitas. I cannot pronounce his last name for the life of me, from Midwest Grows Green as the panel. And it'll be a live webinar, I guess Zoom. I don't know how the library does it exactly. So talking about the Healthy Lawn, Healthy Family program, and also talking about what they're doing in the Keystone Park. Is that what he was mentioning? I'm not up to date on the Keystone Park project, but. Mm-hmm. So that'll be April 10th, if anybody wants to, you know, join in on that. And that's really where we're at with Healthy Lawn, Healthy Families and Midwest Grows Green.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, do you want to go? I feel it.
Yeah, I'm just going to push because I have some stuff coming up on the agenda, Lisa. Thanks.
Okay.
I can go next.
Great.
So let's see, I attended a bunch of meetings. Planet Green met on January 21st. There's another meeting coming up on Thursday. So Planet Green is focusing on the points. They had a review of the program, and so they're focusing on the points that they were identified as being a little bit behind in. So one thing they'd really like to do is to improve their outreach and to, start thinking about how to pull in people who are not, you know, who are not seeking this out on their own, which is, they're looking at this from, you know, sort of a racial lens, from an income lens and everything. Gary is also in conversations with facility managers throughout the two villages to push for an electrification of the buildings. So in River Forest, the big things that would fall under that would be Dominican, Concordia, Trinity, and I don't know what the name of it, but that new senior center on Harlan.
Sheridan.
And then the other thing that they're focusing on is waste, because again, that was identified as something that both villages are really lagging behind in. So, you know, trying to push models of opt-out programs. I know some of the students have been involved in that. And again, working with the major institutions to see how they're handling waste. So Planet Green, I was also invited by Adrian Fisher from West Cook Wild Ones to join a meeting on the Illinois Monarch Project. Can you guys hear me? I just got a thing that my, can you hear me? Okay. On the Illinois Monarch Project, which is pretty exciting. It's a 20-year project statewide to plant 150 million milkweed by 2038, and also the supporting pollinators for the adult butterflies. And so there's going to be a really big push in Oak Park this summer. A Brooks School has come up with an initiative calling this the Year of the Butterfly and identifying butterflies as inspiring hope, and we all need hope now. And there were all kinds of participants on there from the libraries, schools, Friends of Oak Park Conservatory, just a really big group, a lot of energy around this. So I know that on the River Forest side, we're not interested in adding a lot of programs, but I'm thinking through how we can incorporate this into some of the projects that we already have, like the Parkway for Pollinators, the Community Garden. And so I guess that leads into my next. I met with David Murphy to talk about Deep Roots and start doing some advanced planning for the summer. So we're looking into some funding options, the Openlands grant that we got last year, West Cook Wild Ones, which is not really appropriate for us because that's for nonprofits. And then Seventh Generation Planet Green. I don't think there's a lot of scope for that, but David wanted me to ask anyway. So, and we talked about that, you know, it's possible this summer might have to be a scaled down program. So in order to increase the impact, we might consider doing this in a different way, that instead of saying, you know, first one to hear about it signs up, it's going to be a little bit more like a grant. And we thought about having criteria. For example, somebody, a household would have to be part of the Healthy Lawns in order to qualify for this grant, so that we're kind of leveraging some of our different programs. Of course, they could sign up for it at the same time, because that's what we're trying to encourage people. But having some criteria, like if there's already one on the on your block, then you will be given lower, you know, but making it a little bit more of a reward, because what we learned last year was there was tremendous demand for this. So since there's demand, I think we can ask more of people who, you know, who want to participate in this. And of course, continuing to reach out to institutions, which we did last year as well. And then I also met with Mary Masala to do some preliminary planning for the community garden. So we're going to change a couple of things about that. We've discovered that there are many Oak Park people who have snuck into this garden. So we're going to make that explicit, and we're going to have a deadline for River Forest. And then following that, there'll be a deadline for Oak Park. We're going to ask people from Oak Park to pay more. And we're going to include, you know, some friendly statements saying, you know, if you sneak in on a River Forest name, which some people do, then you risk losing your garden, you know, if you're not coming in and identifying yourself as a non-resident. And then we also talked about, you know, just in line with the Monarch Project, incorporating more pollinators in the flower garden, which Mary has already done in the past, but just kind of being mindful of that. And then, you know, kind of inventorying all the things that we've done and feeding that back into the Illinois Monarch Project.
Thank you. Thank you. Shannon, do you want to go? Or should I just hold you off since, yeah, why don't you go?
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I did become, through some work on some other things related to our greenhouse gas inventory. I became aware of maybe a digital solution that we could look into for supporting us with our greenhouse gas inventory and some climate action modeling and things like that. So that is one thing I've been looking into and put some requests out for. So more to come on that. But yeah, I think that's all I have for right now. And we can talk about next steps with the inventory.
All right, I can go and then I'll turn the floor over. Basically, gosh, I did speak with all of you. I did attend the Mayor's Caucus Community Roundtable. And I took notes and I sent them out to everybody via BCC so you can see. I do think that Barrington is a lot like us in terms of, like South Barrington, in terms of having a pretty robust program for a small town. They don't have a sustainability team member as part of the village. They also don't, it's run, like they're just like, you know, John, you're our kind of, our like internal, advocate with the village administration. They have a engineer that does that, so similar. And the one thing that I thought was amazing is that they recycle styrofoam. And I didn't know you could recycle styrofoam. And you could recycle styrofoam through, they actually have volunteers that that carry it up to McHenry, to Woodstock. There's a place where there's a big styrofoam collection center. And then they actually make it into new styrofoam. So I thought that was worth, that was quite interesting, and that might be something to kind of explore. And then secondly, and this is something that is more for, I guess, public works and not necessarily our purview, is because a lot of the things they talked about, and I don't know if you had a chance to read it, so like Barrington went first and that was very exciting. Then they talked about, you know, community gardens, somebody did, and someone did a, you know, kind of local farmers market and things like that. So I tried to draw implications in the document I shared, but the one thing that I found fascinating about, and it was had to do with sustainable flood mitigation, is that North Chicago, what they found is their 500-year Des Plaines floodplain has become their 100-year floodplain, which, you know, I don't know if we have the same thing in River Forest, but it would be something really kind of good to look at, because that's a little bit crazy, but it is true with climate change. And I think that's it in terms of kind of, you know, what I've done. I've met with most of you guys throughout, but we've talked about that. So let me quickly go then into, if I can, like, I guess, actually what I would like to do, and Ellie, I know you spoke already. Last time we didn't let, you know, we didn't have time, and I want to make time for the student commissioners to speak. So I don't know if the student commissioners have any kind of remarks or would like to, you know, kind of say anything as part of commissioner comments.
The only thing that I've worked on since the last meeting is the Meatless Mondays. So I don't have much else to report.
Okay, thank you.
The only thing I've sort of worked on was those info videos for composting. Mm-hmm. So I don't have anything else to report.
Yeah, same as Luke. I've been working on videos. It's recycling. Also, like in these reports, can we talk about like anything we've done, like involving like local environmental things? Because I can also talk about the candidate form. I know Susan sent out an email replying to that because in It's Our Future, me and another kid, Manila, who's also in River Forest, on behalf of It's Our Future, we're hosting like a forum with the two candidates running for president in Oak Park, which I know we're in River Forest, but it's because like we're on behalf of It's Our Future and it's an Oak Park and River Forest group. Yeah. So we're doing like a forum with them, and then Susan emailed us with the idea of also doing one for River Forest. So I just had a meeting with Gary today, and we considered that idea, and we might be doing that as well.
Awesome, that would be good. I know Katie Brennan had reached out to Gary. Katie Brennan, a trustee for the Village of River Forest, because she saw the Oak Park one and she was interested in maybe having one for River Forest. So thank you for pushing that. Okay, anybody else?
Lisa, I had something I forgot to mention during my commissioner report, which I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention that there is a virtual conference coming up the last two weekends of February. I'm going to put it in the chat. It's called the Wild Things Conference, if any of you have ever heard of it. It's really more conservation oriented, but there's a great lineup of programs. It's all virtual, and it's only $15 to register for each weekend. You can, you know, register for the weekend separately or both of them. It's the same price. But I just shared the link in the chat.
Beth, is it normally at Triton College? Do they usually have?
I'm not sure where it normally is if it's in person, but it's all virtual this year.
Okay, and I'm going to revert back to public comment, which I know is highly unusual. But Catherine, like why don't I do this? Let me explain, because we are actually pioneers amongst the commissioner. You know, amongst the commissions, in that not only like most commissions only have adult commission nurse, that would be, you know, the folks that are over, you know, kind of 18 in the room, or I should, it like, and then we did last year pilot student commissioners, and we then kind of expanded it this year, and then we're really working hard to have resident volunteers. So for example, and let me just explain, you know, the adult commissioners, we apply through the Village website. We are appointed by the president and approved by the board. The student commissioners, you guys also you kind of provide you apply online, and then the application comes to me, and I then recommend it to the president, and she, I believe she sent each of you a letter kind of asking you to join. And then with resident volunteers, I mean, Catherine, thank you, reached out to Lauren and said she wanted to get involved, and we were like, great. You know, you are a welcome member of the team. Mary Masala, who Susan mentioned doing community gardens, I think she was one of the first trustees and then opted to no longer serve as a trustee, but she still stays very much involved with regard to the community gardens. And we're, thank goodness we have her, again, to keep that going, liaising with the Park District and with Susan. And then last but not least, we have a newer person, Maggie Clancy, who has volunteered to help with electric vehicles and green transportation, who is working with Eric Simon. So it's important, I think, if we have these resident volunteers, again, I came up with the name, if anybody can come up with a new one, that's great. But the resident volunteers, we try to align them, their interests with kind of a commissioner. In my mind's eye, many hands make light work, but we do have those three levels. So basically adult commissioners have voting rights. I don't think we vote on a lot, but when we do, the votes of the adult commissioners count. And then the public comments, you can't, like, and this is where if you're a resident volunteer, you're part of the public. So one way, Catherine, for you to kind of engage through the process and keeping with parliamentary procedure and everything else that we have to do is, you know, like is to participate through public comments. And we do public comments and then we go into commissioner comments. So you could just be kind of the last public comment or the first, you know, you'll be on that, you know, kind of part of that chain. So I don't want to leave you out. It's not my intention. And apologies, you know, but we do, I had to make it clear for me. So I actually talked to Kathy Aducey about it to say, okay, can I do this? And one thing to note is that other commissions are looking to follow suit and add students. Because, you know, like, and for two reasons. One is, again, as I said, many hands make light work. I think it also is good for the students because we're hoping that you're exposed to kind of how government works and kind of how the different commissions work. And also you bring a different perspective, and that perspective is very important as we, you know, try to make decisions, right? We all come with our own, you know, kind of our own point of view that, you know, kind of is made up of our experiences and our education and our kind of learnings over time. So the more that we can have diverse thought, the better. So does that make sense for everybody? Okay. I will go back to public comments for you because I don't want you to not have a voice.
I have a question before you go back to public comments. I'm wondering, how does that relate to the Meetings Act? Like, for example, if two commissioners met with a student commissioner who's not voting, is that a violation of the Meetings Act?
It is not.
And same applies?
We've already cleared that through.
Okay, and same applies to Catherine?
Correct. And is everybody's aware of the Open Meetings Act, correct, amongst the students? And like, I don't know, Catherine, if we ever talked about that, but yeah, there's rules with regard to how governmental meetings need to happen. It's set by the state. And one thing is Open Meetings Act is in that, and it's a percentage of the size of your commission, but it is, that only applies to voting members. And so given the size of our commission, we can only have two people talk to each other. If we have three adult commissioners, were in violation of that act.
Unless we announce it.
Unless what?
Unless we announce it.
Unless we announce the meeting, yes. And in theory, basically make it open to the public or record it and make the results available for those, you know, those who couldn't be here.
All understood. Okay. It makes sense. Yeah.
And do you have anything you want to say through public comments?
I just had some ideas later that I can email to you about the leaf blower debate, which I'm not as experienced in, so I'll just email you that later. But otherwise, yeah, just same thing with Lauren's commission, just kind of gathering resources. And I've also been reading some climate action plans, but that's all I have for now.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay. All right, so we've got through clarifying the River Forest sustainability participation, and we should all give ourselves a high five because we are leading the village commissions on this front. And I think it's a great thing.
Lisa, can I ask, I forgot, I was reading over my notes that I had written a while ago. Sorry, I wasn't here for the past couple months, but I had an idea for the Healthy Lawn that I just realized as I was reading over my notes. And it was a community challenge, like to see if we got more people signed up, the block who had the most people, we could have a drawing for 3 months of free composting.
Yeah, we could do something like that. I mean, if you work it through. I mean, the 3 months of composting, I mean, it's not that expensive for us, so it's not gonna break our budget. Mm-hmm. And also it actually gets people to try the composting, you know, to try mm-hmm. composting, and then hopefully they can convert to continue to receive it. So.
Okay. So that was, I had it somewhat written in my spring letter. So I just wanted to clear that if I could keep it in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to look at your letter. I will. I just haven't done it yet.
Okay. You know, I think another incentive might even be, you know, kind of carry what you were talking about. If it was like a block effort, is having their like photo posted in the village newsletter or.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Which wouldn't, you know, cost anything or, you know, mm-hmm. at all. But I think people would get a kick out of that for mm-hmm. you know, whatever reason.
Yeah.
The bragging rights, right?
Well, uh-huh. We did that for the tree trail.
Yeah.
With our, you know, just promoting these programs, because somebody might see that and say, oh, I didn't know about that. And
so. Yeah.
Definitely.
That's a great idea.
But as a side note, that makes me think of, you know, John, maybe afterwards I can follow up with you to see if the people that we gave the free composting to for tree trails, you know, whether they've converted to paying customers or we should do some kind of outreach. I guess I should do some sort of outreach to see about that.
Hey, John, can you find out if they converted and just let us know?
Yeah, if you want to send me their information, I don't have it in front of me, but I can look into it.
Yeah, I'll send you a reminder of their names.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Next, I wanted to move on to grant opportunities. You know, it's been pretty quiet on grant opportunities, and it sounds like David Murphy is talking about grant opportunities with regard to kind of our Pollinator for Parkway program. I've gotten a number of emails sent my way, and the two, one is for open lands, which is through ComEd, and there's two that we potentially could qualify for. One is for electric vehicles and one is for Pollinator for Parkway program. And the second one is the Cook County Wild Ones for Pollinator for Parkway program. It would be, so I guess I just, like Susan, I know you spoke a little bit about both of the grants already. Once you know kind of where we are with qualification, I just would like to get back to, or you can get back to Katie Brennan and copy me. I just wanna make sure that she's aware that we kind of took it as far as we could. And I thank you for kind of taking the lead there. And I'm hoping a lot of the material that we've already created potentially is useful. I know with regard to the electric vehicles, Eric, you know, I don't know if I should turn the floor over to you. This was what like you were referencing when you said you kind of hold your comments until.
Yeah, so I don't have, you know, much of an update. You know, Lisa, you sent out that request to Maggie and I that we're gonna get with John on. So we'll probably have more of a report out during the next meeting. What I can tell you about with the EV readiness program is that there's still not funding for it. So this is what I've been talking about like the last few meetings where in 2019, the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus kind of kicked off a EV readiness program. They did receive grant funding, which basically designed the program and it's ready to go, but it's not funded yet. So basically the EV Ready program, you know, they're looking for grant funding. The state of Illinois has prioritized about $10 million from the Volkswagen settlement, but nothing has yet kind of happened with that. So, you know, so there's kind of different things that right now are just hanging out there waiting to kind of be, to get funding or kind of whatever it finally needs to get to the finish line. So that's kind of where we're sitting right now, Lisa, with, you know, certainly with the MMC program.
Mm-hmm. Is that one of the things that when you were gonna like basically, like what you and I had gone back and forth on yesterday in terms of at least like, putting forth our interest in participating while we wait?
So we have actually registered interest in the EV readiness program. That was a while back. The one that I was hassling you on was the community solar clearinghouse.
Okay.
And John, I need to get with you on this one. We've at least told them we're interested. This is also a Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus program that, does basically community solar in mass for all the members of the MMC just to make it a lot easier. And John, the reason I didn't talk to you is because there's two elements of it. There's like a residential subscriber piece of it, but there's also a municipal power usage. I don't know. I know we don't pay for most of our usage, but I do know we pay for pump house and things like that.
Right. So. Well, I could just speak to that for a moment because I was approached by a solar company that wanted to put solar at the pumping station, but in order to do that, they would have to take up a ton of green space and put solar panels all around the pumping station. And I was like, you know, I don't think we're interested in that, but what if we put solar panels on the roof of the public works garage and use that to offset the pumping station? And this particular company, they don't work that way. They said, you know, that would be a different kind of program. And I'm thinking, well, that sounds more like a community solar program, right? Where if we could put them on the public works garage and offset the cost at the pumping station, that would be ideal, because we don't want to take up the green space, obviously, the few green space that we have at the pumping station. And yeah. So I mentioned I wanted to bring that up at the commission level, and maybe that's what we're really close to having, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, okay. So there's a couple different things that are kind of dovetailing here. So the community solar are local projects that you would buy interest in those projects. So it's a little bit different. So, but that is something like for the pump house, because that is a big power usage. You know, that we could offset our traditional power usage with buying an interest in one of these community solar projects that are going on in the region. Actually, some of them are very local, like Elgin is the current one. So there's that piece. And then what you're talking about is actually something we could do right away, or at least we could get proposals right away on. So what we can model after what the Oak Park Park District did, which is they used basically power purchase agreements to put solar on pretty much every single one of their buildings they could put solar on. And then they get a portion of that power to offset their usage. And these companies pay for it. So that's why it's a PPA, is that you basically buy back the power from them at a discount. So, well, we can talk about that offline, but okay. I have great documentation on that we got from Oak Park a few years ago when we were talking about working with the River Forest Park District and their roof space. And we were talking to, we also had a meeting with D90 a couple years ago to put solar on their 300-year-old roofs. Which ends up being a little bit complicated, but let's take that offline, because if we have an opportunity to put solar on your public works garage, that would be awesome, and it could cost us nothing.
Right, that would be great, because the few contacts that I've spoken to about it, apparently that's not what they do, and they were steering me towards putting it all at the pumping station. I'm like, I don't think that's the way we want to go. So no. if there is another route.
And to be cost neutral on this means it's something that we could probably get approval on, you know, easier than it having a price tag associated.
Right.
Chris, I forget his last name, but Chris over at
Oak Park.
He's a great resource. He's really willing to talk to other people, really excited about this. So
he's awesome. So Susan's talking about he's basically the director of Parks and Rec, whatever it's called in Oak Park. And he's done some awesome programs, and he loves talking about it. I think he's
the facility director, not the program director.
Got it. He's who I have all the documentation from of what they did. So yeah, so like Susan said, he's super willing to share. And
they're doing programs all the time. So he has much more, you know, recent information as well. They just did Carroll Park one. I think it's completely net zero, and they're just seeking out every opportunity, and almost all of it gets paid with
Chris Lindgren is his
yes
name. Okay,
that would be awesome if we could do that, John.
Yeah
I think we're close. I mean,
yeah,
if it's been done, I think we can
go. So you're saying the village does pay John for the power at the pump house?
Right, so the village pays for power at the pump house. And the village does not have to pay at the public works garage. And so the challenge that we face is, okay, we can, up until this point, you know, there's been this, I want to say narrow-minded approach of, well, you could put solar panels at the garage, but it's not going to give you any benefit at the pump house. So
but you can, as
that just doesn't work for us. So we want to just put them at the garage and use that power towards the pump house. Right.
Use it as a credit.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like it rarely works out where you want to put the solar is where your meter is for where you're using the power.
Right.
So there's plenty of models to support this.
That would be a great thing to explore.
And then I just have one more comment on the subject of grants, which is, so this is on the West Cook Wild ones. These are relatively small grants. So it would cover like a garden, and it's for nonprofits, not for municipalities. Mm-hmm. So what David Murphy wanted me to ask from Deep Roots is he wanted me to ask if this would fit in with our, you know, trying to strengthen the bonds between Maywood, and somehow we would be involved to help David get a grant from West Cook Wild Ones, which would then be used in Maywood. So I said I would bring that up.
So basically that so basically we would get the grant and then basically pay him. I'll have to ask the board. I mean, I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
And that's something that I think we want to start doing. And if it basically puts another garden in and it helps our neighbor, that might be, you know, one way for us to contribute to the twin, you know, the Twin City covenant. So let me ask.
Well, can David just apply directly as Deep Roots?
Yeah, so that was my question. I said, what is our role in this? I mean, you can apply our model, you can do everything the same. Because we can't apply for the grant. He has to apply because Deep Roots is a nonprofit. And I also think it strengthens the grant if the recipient is a nonprofit. Like, I don't think they would be interested in doing this on a private lawn. The only recipient last year that actually received it was Lincoln School. And they enhanced their two pollinator gardens. They have one in Franklin, one in Park. And they also, they have a very, I don't know if you guys have been over there, they have an extensive native garden by the kindergarten side and a butterfly garden and everything. So they just used to enhance it. And they're also interested in signage, but I don't think they've.
Well, right, because David is, you know, Deep Roots is actually, they're the ones that are really implementing the program on behalf of the commission or something like that, right? So I wonder if there's some way for Deep Roots to become the grant applicant and recipient, sort of, you know, with the commission being a co-applicant or a supporting applicant or something like that, right? Where the model kind of gets turned around instead of the commission and the village applying for receiving the funds and transferring the funds to Deep Roots. It's almost like the program is kind of so mature that they're running it that we could almost spin it off.
that's what it is essentially, because, you know, I can't apply for the grant. So it is, it's just taking the river forest, spinning it off. And, you know, and then the other thing I would just bring up, because this comes up in Planet Green, this has been sort of a major thing as we're doing this work, is that we don't want to impose our solutions on Maywood. So, you know, there has to be sort of an approach to them. Is this something that, you know, that you would like that would help? Because maybe there's, you know, some other environmental thing which would be of much higher value to them, you know, to use $500 to $1,000 on. And so in order to be respectful of them, they should be
able to. You mean respectful of Deep Roots and what they might want to apply for?
Respectful of the village of Maywood.
Oh, sure. Right. Yeah, that's a whole nother thing. I mean, I'm talking about Deep Roots applying it for doing the work that they've been doing in River Forest.
But again, it would have to go to a nonprofit,
Deep Roots is a nonprofit, right?
But I think the recipient would also have to be a nonprofit.
The recipient of the garden?
Yes.
No. The recipient of the funds, right?
Both.
I think Susan's saying the recipient of the funds and the recipient of the garden, but then if the recipient of the garden has to be a nonprofit, then you're not talking about like an individual homeowner.
No. So if it was in Maywood, it would be more like a church or, you know, maybe one of the municipal buildings. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you want to give us some more thoughts, Susan, and then I'm happy to kind of, you know, bring it up. I think that that is something that obviously the village is looking to do, is figure out how we can, I mean, I think we have to be careful because we have our hands full with our own stuff. But I also think that if it's an extension of the program, I don't know how, and again, in particular, pollinating for Parkway program or something like that, it like David's doing a lot of that, you know, heavy lifting, that might be, you know, a good one to do. But
I was gonna say it's not much work on our part either. Right. Because he's the one that's gonna put in the garden. So.
Exactly.
You know, so I don't know if he's asking for like some help with the grant, which I'm happy to do that. But yeah, so I mean I think we could do this concurrently if you want to bring it up with the village board and just see if that's something okay. They're interested in.
Right,
getting.
So I'll report back.
And, you know, again, no cost to us and virtually other than a little assistance, virtually no work on it.
Okay. I will. Okay, the next thing I wanted to talk about was just like opportunities to participate in some of these sustainable organizations. And I think the first thing I just wanted to clarify, and I think we did it last year, and I think we've kind of got into the groove a little bit, but it's obvious Susan is kind of our conduit to Planet Green. She's also the conduit to Green America, which is where we kind of put all of our, that's where we list all of our gardens. Midwest Grows Green is Carrie McLean, and I think Carrie, you know, because of David Murphy, you're like a secondary contact with the Deep Roots Project. I should probably put them on here because the Deep Roots Project is also something that, you know, Susan works with a lot with regard to the Pollinator for Parkway program. Mayor's Caucus, go on.
And the gardens, which we still have an extra garden out there. That Dominican never took.
I know. I think we should just give that one away. And I think we were going to try to do it last year, but we couldn't because of COVID. Just like Trinity. Trinity planted their garden. I mean, got their garden, but then never planted it because they all went home. But now that they're in school, hopefully that we can, you know, get that one planted and then figure out where the next one should go. I think at this point, give it away.
And I need to figure it out to make sure that happens.
Yeah. Like the Mayor's Caucus, I mean, obviously Kathy Aducey is very much involved in that. I'm involved from an environmental perspective, or I'm trying to be, and Cheryl Scott's reaching out to me on that. One thing to note, and so I don't know, because she did bring it up, is there is an Earth Day kind of conversation that is taking place on Tuesday the 16th, so next Tuesday. From 10 a.m. to noon. And unfortunately I can't do it because I've got a client meeting. Usually my schedule's pretty loose, but they're very excited because of something that Julie worked with Kathy on last year. I don't think any of us were really involved. If you remember, for those that were around, we really tried last year for Earth Day to figure out something different to do. And then COVID hit. So it ended up being a very well-written email that I can send to everybody from Kathy, highlighting all of the things that we do as a village, you know, to protect the earth. It included a scavenger hunt, you know, an Earth Day scavenger hunt and things like that. So at the very least, I think we kind of probably will kind of update that and do it. And so I don't know if anybody would like to volunteer to kind of look at that and take it on. I know that we're going to try to get our white waste diversion videos done by that, Lauren. So we'll have to see if that, you know, kind of, if we can, depends on when the snow leaves us and when, what your like shooting schedule will be. But so basically, I guess two things. One is if anybody wants to attend that environmental meeting, the Mayor's Caucus meeting at 10 a.m. on the 16th. And then again, Eric is doing energy. And I think, Eric, you're kind of a one-man band. And I did ask Kathy if student commissioners and or residents could attend some of these meetings on our behalf. And it is possible for us to have residents. It would be great if we do have residents attending. So for example, Eric, if you want to, you know, maybe see if Maggie can attend a meeting or two. If you can't, that's perfectly fine, at least per, you know, the village. I just think we just need to have like notes from the meeting so we know what happened, or a link to, like, I'm sure they all take notes anyway, and just a link to it. So there is a way for us to kind of, again, expand participation and have different people join.
That's so good to know, because I can make most of the energy subcommittee meetings, but not all of them. So that's good.
Yeah, I think I think there has to be consistency, right? But I think that if you're in Maggie are working closely together, I think they said it's fine. And I think Katie, I'd ask, you know, Catherine, you know, I know that you couldn't do it, but with regard to kind of the Illinois composting thing, Illinois Composts, which is part of Seven Generations Ahead, or at least related to them, continues to reach out. They wanted us to do a presentation in March. I'd push that till May, specifically because I want to highlight some of the waste aversion videos at that time. So we'd have kind of some new news on that front. So, you know, that's it. I mean, I will continue to try. I will do a better job because I think sometimes like we get it's email overload and there's a lot of meetings with a lot of things. I know that Carrie's attending, again, a lot of Midwest Grows Green stuff. So I will just shoot them out there. And if anybody can attend, just let me know. So we do have a voice out there. I think that that's one thing Julie, my predecessor, did a lot of. She had a lot more time than I think we do. Just given kind of where she, you know, kind of her priorities in life and things like that. We did the update. Okay, so anything else to talk about or anybody have any questions with regard to the organization meetings? Okay, we talked about.
Yeah, I would add. I thought I interrupted something. I would add West Cook Wild Ones and also the Interfaith Green Network that both Eric and I try to attend things through them.
Do you guys attend those meetings regularly?
No.
For IGN? No.
Yeah. No. More. I attend more like events.
Same. Like I think we both go to the annual meeting. Like, if there's something going on in particular that sounds interesting, I try to go. I think Susan does the same thing.
Yeah, but they co-sponsor things and they're very vocal at Planet Green. They're well represented there and they share a lot.
Okay. And do you go to the West Cook Wild Ones?
No, but I've been thinking of. Again, I try to go to their events. So.
Okay. And then I want to be cognizant of time. We talked about Meatless Mondays, and now we have Meatless Mondays and Meat Free Fridays. So we can use both. Just try to think of a new logo that covers both. I just want to cover. Two things, and I'm like from the editorial calendar. I sent out an email. I was trying to assign responsibilities in terms of providing some of the getting copy written by the folks that have the expertise to write the copy. This past year, I've really tried hard to make sure that we were represented in each and every email sent by the village. There's a monthly email. There's an opportunity to have two topics in those emails. And then we might as well post them on Instagram and Facebook at the same time. For some of you, I don't know, it's second nature to me. And I think that there were some questions in terms of how does this all hang together? So I was gonna do like a little, you know, kind of like, I don't know if anybody saw, and I'll pull it up. Eric, his solar, basically he did a post for solar that was featured on Facebook and got a lot of traction. In fact, Eric Kyler Brown wants to know how much solar costs. So I told him to PM me his information. I don't know if you know Kyler Brown. He has a big house on, a big white house on Thatcher. I did send him to the website if he had any questions, but that was really kind of well done. So I'm just gonna share my screen so people can see that. And then one of the unanticipated consequences, or I guess a benefit, I should say, of this calendar is it's forced, actually, when Beth and I spoke about it, it actually kind of forced us to talk about what are all the programs and how do they fit together in terms of community outreach and communication. So for example, Beth suggested some changes to the editorial calendar. So for example, I had tree trails in the fall, but if we're gonna have tree trails as activity as part of green block parties, we need to move it up to May. So I will definitely look at that. And again, you tell me, because I don't want to waste your time if it's, you know, totally obvious. But at the same time, it's important that you look at that
And then if something doesn't make sense in terms of the timing of doing something, if something doesn't make sense in terms of like even speaking about it, you know, kind of like it's important that, you know, kind of your voice that your voice is heard in that front. Hold on, I'm trying to find Eric, your email.
And I'll just chime in that, you know, I think I didn't realize till I talked about it more with Lisa that this is actually kind of the foundation of all of our work. I think it's easy to think of it as like, oh, great, you know, this is something the village is putting out, it's taking care of or whatever, but it helped me to actually really focus on this as just like a key foundation thing that we all need to make sure happens, and everything else we do is kind of built on top of that. Because if we don't have a systematic kind of communications plan, you know, then all of our initiatives will also seem kind of scattershot to the public, right? But if we roll them out in a kind of coordinated way, then people can start to see, oh, okay, here's, you know, this program this time of year, and another one is being rolled out and another one is being reinforced. So I found it really helpful to take a closer look.
Yeah, and I do think, I mean, because Beth and I also talked about, I mean, Beth is, you know, has, not only does she, like Beth, I know that you have a real interest in, you know, kind of programming and education. If you think about the tree trails, the base foundation is that community outreach that we know we have to do a good job on. And I know we talked about the website, and I've taken that to heart. And actually the website, they've actually updated it. I don't know if you guys have seen that there's now kind of link, there's quick links to areas of interest, and the sustainability area of interest is always at the top. And I think that varies based on kind of like what's clicked on. So that's actually new news for me. I don't know, John, if they've updated the website or if it's just different technology, but I wanted to just share with you quick my screen so you can see, for those that might not see it. Here is kind of, this is our Instagram page, and I can show you kind of the Facebook page for the village as well. So they highlighted a local business, they have an e-news release, and then here is kind of a visual for us. You know, and this is kind of for rooftop solar. And then it links, this one doesn't link to the website because it's Instagram. If I go to Facebook, you could see kind of a similar, you know, that the same thing would be there, and it would be a little bit different. But we have 20 likes, which actually for our little, you know, kind of town is, you know, it is nice. We always get a lot of engagement, I should say, with this. And if you look back, this is the thing, you know, we obviously, there's a lot going on in the village, highlighting local businesses and the like. Our last one, if you get to go back and back and back, we had a couple in a row in January. We had our New Year's resolution for Say No to Plastics. We had electronic recycling through the not-for-profit in WeWorks. We did that in January because if people got new electronics, they might be getting rid of their old ones. We want to make sure they get it, they get rid of them in a responsible manner. They can certainly always do it through Strom, but, you know, spending the money and giving it to charity is always the best thing. And then we did something with regard to recycling Christmas trees, or I should say composting trees, because there was a lot of talk about what do you do with your tree, and I don't think anybody realized that we do compost our trees. So here we have 7 likes, here 8, this one, you know, for 27, that actually is a big one. So it's interesting, and it goes back further. So this becomes an important kind of place for us to be, in addition to Kathy's emails and Facebook. So
Lisa, did you write that copy and then the village staff helped you come up with find the graphics, or did staff write the copy?
Well, what happened is, and this for this one, for solar, Eric wrote the copy.
Okay.
He gave me 2 visuals, and I like this one the best, so I used it because I was more graphic. But I can show you
No, I'm just trying to figure out, like, so then as the commissioners who are responsible for certain content, are we supposed to send you copy and an image?
If you can, yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then I send it, and it's all on our Google Doc. Here, let me get to Google.
And Beth, that's just my roof. So, like,
yeah, like it's not...
It was pretty easy to come up with that.
Huh. How'd you take it? Drone?
Actually, I have a bunch of drone footage.
I was kind of joking, but I should have known you would actually have a drone.
No, it's actually funny. Actually, Charles Rager took the drone footage of our roof back in the day.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, so basically usually, and all the copy for every post is on the Google Drive. I can't get to it now because I'm on Zoom for some reason. But in that Google Drive is every copy, and I can show you one of what it looks like. So for example, here is one that I did in here's the one that I did that hasn't posted yet for saving water. I would have loved to have done this in March. March 22nd is World Water Day, but I couldn't make it work. Because I had nothing else to say, so we did it in January. But 12 things that you can do to save water together. Literally, I Googled and found this online and stole it. And then the image is from online as well. This one, this is the email copy. Oops, I'm not sharing, am I? Probably wondering what I'm doing. Sorry. Sorry, here it is. So here's the email copy with an image, save water. And then basically the Facebook and Instagram copy for this one is different because I said, let's say, actually, I am actually asking them to do two posts this month. One is let's save water together, 4 tips to help conserve water outdoors. And then let's save water together, 4 tips to conserve water indoors. So, literally, it's a combination of, you know, seeing what copy already exists, and, you know, seeing what images are in the public domain that we can just use and to get our messages out. So basically, this is what I would send. So I took what Eric sent me, and this is, I send it to the village in this format. So Sarah and Jonathan Pape are used to seeing it in this format, and they can, and they will then take it, and they tweak it.
Sure.
Most certainly, because they know, you know, kind of what works and what doesn't. And I always try to put hashtags where it makes sense. And we do have a number of hashtags that are standard hashtags that are on the Google Drive editorial calendar.
So I'll just say about images, if we're pulling images from the web, as you mentioned, like, we probably just need to be careful that we give credit if we're using somebody else's image.
Yeah, probably. I would say though, given how we're using it, I haven't been that worried about it yet. There have been a couple images that they've that Sarah has swapped out for different images. So you know, maybe that's something we can explore in terms of, you know, how we feel about kind of using. I usually look for free images. Again,
you know, just another thing to think about too, although Lisa, I really do like those images that you picked out that have like action items, you know, it's all packaged in a really nice graphic. But I think the images where people stop and like things are the ones that where they can see their neighbors, or it's a picture of a person. So like, for example, although, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Eric's roof, you know, 20 likes, awesome. The tree trails with Mimi Lannan got 40 likes because it's a picture of her. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, I know her, she's my neighbor or whatever. And I think that they'll pause then and are maybe more likely to read whatever text is there.
Yeah.
So it might be just something to think about in the future, you know, who are our neighbors? And maybe even, you know, Eric can go up on the roof and just like do a selfie or something, you know, of the solar panels.
No, that's a good, that's a very good point. That's
that
a
makes
very
sense. Point.
The one thing we'd have to do is, and the village did ask for them, because when we picked, when we featured your girls for composting, we did have to get a release.
Oh yes. And yeah, that, and that makes total sense. But I'm guessing that, you know, people wouldn't have a problem doing that.
Yeah. No, actually that would have made a better shot, Eric, as long as we're hanging off the roof.
Near death experiences get a lot of likes, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's
true. I promise I'll do better next time.
Last but not least, okay, so that's that. And so in terms of, I will ping the folks that I need help with in terms of for the March topics. And again, I am in no way married to kind of what we're talking about when. I just think it's important to talk about it. And I think it's also important to talk about it in an order that makes sense. Hence, for example, moving tree trails up so we can marry it with green black parties. Two things that we're gonna have to talk about in the near term is green black parties. John, do you know if actually the village is gonna, if we're doing black parties this year? Can you find out for us? I know last year it was that shalt not have a block party because of COVID.
I think it's all dependent on, you know, what's allowed as far as gatherings go. I mean, I can find out, but I would guess that if gatherings aren't really allowed, that it's not going to happen, but I'll see what I can find out.
Okay. Yeah, if you could, that would be great. Because, for example, last year we know that Oak Park did block parties and we didn't. So we took a more stringent view, which is fine. I just think we need to know if we need to prepare for that. Because then, you know, that'll, you know, for, I think we can use the tree trails as is. I don't think we need to change it. Beth, you know, like I think that, you know, it can be small groups, you know, to your point, maybe we can do some sort of, you know, some way to incent people to do the tour as part of a block party. I know you had a couple of things there. So a block party is something that's coming up on the horizon that we just have to figure out kind of what that's going to be. Again, we talked about Earth Day. So that's it. Last but not least is finalizing the document that we're going to submit to the board of directors for gas powered leaf blowers. I've learned my lesson to be very precise with words, because if you do look at the agenda, I did say it was a recommendation, but the recommendation isn't for the recommendation is a recommendation for action for them, not from us. So in the future, I'll be more careful. I did get feedback from Beth, which was great. I don't know if anybody else has any feedback. I was able to, and I don't know if you're interested in sharing, because I know we're trying to keep this to 90 minutes and we're coming up to our 90 minute mark, but Shannon was able to get some metrics. And there is, well, although to your point, it's mainly, and actually I want to give Beth a lot of kudos, like totally got me last time when she said, are hydrocarbons, do they really become CO2 emissions? And they don't, they're two different things. So the gas blower thing is a little bit interesting because it's more about the pollutants than greenhouse gas emissions. But Shannon did a lot of work and actually has kind of come up with some statistics that, you know, kind of, I have to review it one more time. I'm happy to share the paragraph. If anybody wants to see it now, you let me know. Or I can forward it out to everybody afterwards for you to kind of take a look at. But my goal would be to try to get this wrapped up and kind of off of our plate this month. I just don't, you know, let's put it to bed as far as I'm concerned, because again, I think it's a broader topic. Unfortunately, I do think it's going to be one that is going to be tough to come to get a group to come to consensus on, as we saw by some of the disparate kind of points of view. I will pull those into the document, the public comments that we got this month.
I just have a few comments quickly. I think one thing that's missing in the document is the commitment that the village has made to carbon neutrality by 2050. And just because this was off our radar doesn't mean that it shouldn't be taken into consideration. So I think one thing for us is that we need to pull this into the metrics that Beth and Shannon are working on, because this is something that we did not consider prior to that. And so I think,
right, I will add the commitment. I think that's implied. So thank you for telling me.
Well, I think it needs to be explicit. And, you know, I think there's a viewpoint running through it that we don't have that much to say about it. But I think something strongly we can say is that the village has committed to net neutrality. And this is, you know, again, something that was off our radar. And if we're going to meet that commitment, then we have to start making changes. So, you know, these comments by people that, you know, we've done this for decades and no one's had a problem with it. So that's what I just want to, I would like to see that pulled in. Also, I was really impacted by the comment of one of the people who was opposed to it, is just how detrimental this is to the health of the workers. Because, you know, it's one thing for us to say, oh, this is so loud and it's in, but I mean, these people are sitting behind this, inhaling this thing. So, you know, as a sustainability commission, I think that's another thing that we can make a strong statement about, that yes, this might be affecting our comfort, but this is affecting the health. And, you know, as we, you know, Beth brought up earlier, as we do try to bring in sort of social justice issues, I mean, this is something that they might not have a lot of, people working in these areas might not have a lot of options. And so one thing we can do as a village is just try to ensure that in the course of their work, they are not, you know, getting cancer and other things, because it's beneficial to the lawn companies and maybe a little bit cheaper for them. So, and then, you know, the only other comment I would throw in is that we talked about chickens this summer and somebody said chickens would be too loud. And so I would just like to compare the decibel level of these blowers. And just because they've been in existence doesn't mean that can't be the criteria. That if we think a chicken squawking is too loud, then imagine from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. virtually at every moment in the summer, hearing a blower in your vicinity. So
if I understand what they're asking, though, aren't they asking, do you go to electric leaf blowers? The noise won't necessarily go away.
Well, to me, noise is a separate issue, and I don't think that's a purview of our group. We are basically focused on reducing carbon emissions. If we stick with that, I think, I do think we need to have that narrow lens, because
that was the initial complaint, was the noise.
It was a noise complaint that they basically added on, that most of the people added on the, in my humble opinion, but I shouldn't say, it's a noise complaint first, and it's a sustainability or environmental issue second.
And public health, probably. Even.
And public health third.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then one other point of fact, towards the end of your document, I thought there was a mistake on the Sunday, because when I read through the rules, I thought the existing rules said that you could not use these on Sunday, but I'd be mistaken about that, because I was reading that all off of your document. So that's just something to check, if whether or not leaf blowers are currently allowed on Sunday.
Actually, it you're allowed to use them on Sunday.
Okay, because one of the things that you posted, it said that you were not at the end in the appendix.
Oh, I think that was the construction. Like, you can't do construction on Sunday.
It specifically said leaf blowers. I can try to find it, but it would just take some time.
Well, that could be my proposed.
No, it was in the appendix.
Oh.
I just mentioned it to check, because it seemed like it didn't match up.
Okay, if you want to tell me where it is, because I did in the appendix, and maybe that's confusing, had what it currently is. And then at one point we were toying with, this is what how we would update it. So there's the old and the new in there.
So
that I get that.
I know we're at the 90 minute mark, but I have a question and then a couple comments. So the new statistics information that Shannon was able to find, does that relate to the carbon emissions, or it relates to other types of pollutants?
Okay, she pulled it back into carbon emissions.
Great, okay, that's awesome. And then my two sort of procedural questions are, and the way that we operate as a commission when we're gonna provide the board with a written document, you know, I'm thinking about the public comments and, you know, the possibility that there may have been some misunderstanding by the people who are commenting on exactly what stage we're at and what it is that we're saying. When would the public see that document? And is that, you know, is the write-up that the commission is providing to the village, how is that made available to the public, I guess?
Well, the public already has a draft because it was in the packet last month.
So I was looking back because I was looking at tonight's packet and I didn't.
Yeah, because I didn't reattach it. I didn't attach.
So it was in last month's packet.
Was in last month's packet, correct, John? Because I sent that.
I don't know. Like, I thought I went back to look at John's agenda from last month and I thought, hey, it's not in here either.
Well, maybe it was emailed separately outside.
Maybe it was. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was in the packet. But what would happen is that it would go, we would basically, I would email it once we're all comfortable. You know, we come to consensus. I mean, it's going to have to be something that we all agree that, yes, this is, you know, kind of what we want to put forward, knowing that, again, I'm going to kind of push for, we really have to focus on our mission and from a mission perspective, what is our recommendation? And certainly, to make it balanced, I was asked to, you know, and I think it's important to add in some of the other mitigating factors that need to be considered, not necessarily by us, but by the board. Hence the recommendation that it really should be a task force that looks at it similar to what happened, what they did in Chevy Chase. And Chevy Chase did have a task force. It was a rather large task force and it had a lot of different perspectives on it, which we're gonna have to have on this task force. I mean, we heard today from a business owner, you know, who has a landscaping business. We heard from a resident who does their own lawn. We heard from a resident that basically uses a lawn service. And then we heard from somebody that didn't state how they did their lawn, but you know, certainly are advocating for a ban. So those are all
different. I mean, I agree with, you know, the outlines and the specifics of what we have in it. I guess I'm just concerned that in the process that we make the people who are giving public comment, make them feel like they've been heard and also make sure that there's no misunderstanding on their part of what the commission's, you know, that the commission was asked to do this. This is not like it's not like the commission just coming up with a proposal to ban gas-powered leaf blowers, yeah. Right? And also because there is quite a lot in that document that explains, like some people in their responses, they may or may not be aware that electric is an alternative to gas-powered blowers. Like they might be just thinking it's a blower or it's hand raking, right? Mm-hmm. And so I guess I would just say I can't find it in my email. So as long as you're sure that the public at some point saw the document, because to make meaningful public comment, I feel like you'd need to see the thorough, you know, comprehensive.
And that would come because what the process is it would go to the board. Before the board can talk about it, they need to put it into the public domain.
Okay, so it doesn't necessarily have to be posted as part of our commission.
We're like a step before that, right? Like
exactly.
Just to be clear, like we've been asked by the Village Board of Trustees to provide input on the on the sustainability aspect of this. They are asking for, they're collecting input. Other aspects of this from maybe not other commissions, but other groups and other research. And we're like just one little.
And I understand that, right? But I guess that's my other procedural question is when people make public comment to a commission, does anybody get back to the individuals who commented to say, this is in fact, just to clarify, right? The commission was asked by the village to provide a recommendation. There is going to be a recommendation, you know, shared with the board of trustees that will be discussed at that level, you know, and because if I made a comment, like some of the people who are like, I had no idea this was there, you know, they're feeling like the commission's coming out of the blue, proposing a ban on, you know, gas powered blowers without telling anybody. That's the sense that I get from some of the comments, right?
Yeah. Could this simply be an email response? Can we just say thank you?
Something like that.
Yeah.
That's why I'm asking procedurally, you know, what is it? The thing is, if you were in person, right, there would be some opportunity they would be there. They would hear what was said.
Yeah. There'd be interaction with us. Well, I think that's fair just to respond to the email.
Mm-hmm. I guess there's a couple of things. One is procedurally, I think Eric's right. Basically, we're submitting to the board. The board then will basically put it on their agenda. our recommendation, our document will go in the packet and people will be asked to make public comments. What I think you're asking for is we also have as a commission, since we've gotten some public comments, how do we acknowledge those public comments? I think one way we do it is we read those public comments on behalf of the people, and they are now part of our recording. I don't know if it actually gets part of a public record. Do all of those public comments get put into the packet that is the documentation of this meeting?
Yes, I mean, they were read as part of the recording of the meeting, and those emails I sent to the commission, that's all part of, the meeting as well. And I responded to every person that sent an email saying that I will pass this on to the commissioners for the meeting tonight.
Right, but that would not have concluded like just a generic explanation of how this issue came to be on our agenda and where it will go from here.
Right.
Well, one thing I can do is it's clear in our document that we were asked by the board on November 30th to look at this issue. That is the first paragraph is that, and that's where the genesis.
But that's why I said that the document itself, like if it hasn't been available before for people to read, then they wouldn't know that. And also it is there, and maybe I'm taking on more than, I guess it's the responsibility of people who are interested to look for the information. But one, I'm not sure that document was posted. And John, if you go back and find it, that's great. I just can't find it in my email.
I can give you the date, Beth. I just found it.
Okay, great.
Or I can resend it.
And the other would just, that would be great, Susan. The other would be just to consider whether, since these are virtual meetings, like a standard reply, email reply that explains procedurally what's happening with it. Maybe lifting that first paragraph about how we were asked and just saying from here it'll go to the village and there will be opportunity for public comment at that time.
Like there just needs to be a couple, just to pile on of what that's saying, just a couple of bullet points. Cause I think even listening to this, like I think there's confusion on what our role is here. Like, so this is just a straight up question. Are we even providing a recommendation or are we just providing information? Cause there's a huge difference in that.
Well, that's what I say. That's why I think my wording, and I'll take full, again, that's my fault in terms of we are providing a recommendation to the board. Our recommendation to the board, if you look at what we said, we're basically saying that, look, this is obvious that from a environmental perspective, from a mission perspective, we believe we need to take some sort of action to restrict. I don't use the word ban because that... I'm trying to not use inflammatory comments right now, because then that would be considered inflammatory to many. But there's a big however there, because there are other mitigating factors that we need to review and understand. And those factors are noise. Those factors are an economic impact on not only businesses, but also on our residents who might have to pay more. I can certainly add in the health and well-being. Now, all those things are mitigating factors that also need to be considered, hence the recommendation. And that is a recommendation that the board take this information and then create a task force that would look at not only our information, but all the other information that all the other mitigating factors to come up with a balanced
recommendation. Because all those other mitigating factors are not in our purview.
Correct. And I think that's what makes this a really hard one. There are very few outright bans, nationwide. I mean,
there's only seven in the state of Illinois, and every single one of them
is a restriction. It's not
a restriction that they're only allowed in the fall
and in the spring. Some of them are spring cleanup, and yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's actually a website that tracks this.
I know. It's in the document too. I put there is a, it's a landscaper. There's a couple of different places that it's actually tracked. But yes, the big bans are in Colorado, Aspen. Yeah. I mean, it ends up being in wealthy areas.
Aspen, Carbondale, and Westminster have complete bans.
Right, right. And then DC's banned it completely. Larchmont is, New York is banning it completely in 2 years from now. Chevy Chase is banning it completely 2 years from now. But again, like the key thing to consider with the ban, this is what Chevy Chase has done, is there's a huge educational component in terms of in terms of what other tools are available. Yes, you can use electric, you can use battery powered, and also for time for businesses to kind of purchase the other product, because to have the power for a spring cleanup or a fall cleanup for that matter takes a lot. You need a powerful machine and it costs more.
So I guess, is this going to come back to the commission again before you send it to the village or not?
I thought you meant, is it going to come back to us from the village board? And I'm like, no, when we turn this over,
no. We're done. Because
I can certainly send it out one more time if you guys want to see it again. I think that's why I wanted to put it on the agenda.
Lisa, just a quick question on that. Were you able to look into the ones that have the restrictions or bans? Are they home rule or non-home rule? Did that make a difference? Do you know?
I didn't look at that.
Because that could be something that could be brought up if the landscapers really are against it. Maybe they'll figure out only home rule communities can do it. I don't know off the top of my head, but
I mean, I maybe could look something, at
that. Yeah, maybe something to look into.
It's all the usual suspects, John. It's Evanston and Allen Park and Wilmette and Winnetka.
Yeah, all the places that care about the environment.
Exactly.
I think another. Yeah.
And I think they're a home rule, though. That's what I mean. Yeah,
they probably are.
Yeah.
Another thing we could think about doing would be to add this to healthy lawns.
And I think that's one of the things that that would be a good thing to do, because I think part of what we're saying is yes, board, you need to take this back and you need to create a task force to look at it from all angles. In parallel, I did say we would do more education and expand, like Leave the Leaves, which right now is a post that was done in the fall because Eric Palm asked me to put forth some sort of education on it. So there is certainly a lot of room to basically do more education and programming on this particular point.
The lawn companies will respond if the residents say we don't want this, the lawn companies will respond. So you may as well go at it by all levels.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, again, for example, I use a lawn service, but I tell them they can't take the leaves out of all my beds.
Yeah,
it makes my neighbors crazy, but I have leaves, a lot of leaves. But, you know, there's a lawn service that, because you really can't leave them on your lawn. You'd have to mulch them very well. So you could argue, I do leave the leaves, but I still use a gas blower.
I tell my landscaper to bring all my leaves over to Lisa's.
See?
All right. Well, you know, I think it's a very thorough document, and I think the commission benefits by letting the people who, you know, are taking the time to express their comments and all that actually see the thoroughness of the comments. So my last sort of broken record comment here is that I've got John's January 8th email that sent out the January meeting packet, and I only see the agenda in the previous month's minutes.
Not, I assumed it was.
Beth, this came on January 13th. Lisa sent it.
As a separate from Lisa, but if it's from Lisa, that's not a public part of the
although packet. I will tell you that in the recording of the January 8th meeting, you will have my reading of it, and I'm sure it was riveting.
You didn't read the entire thing, did you?
Yeah, I did pretty much.
Okay.
I summarized it. I mean,
that's true. You did. I'll be quiet now.
but to your point, I mean.
Well, my point is that I want our residents to feel like the commission is hearing them and to feel that the commission is, you know, fair-minded and thoughtful.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Which we are. So we just need to make sure that they know that. And to me, that includes making the document available somehow and responding to them with like a generic email that, you know, says, here's how it came to be on our agenda. And here's, you know, where it's going to go next. You can look for the next village. If we can look in the next village meeting packets for our written recommendations. And, you know, maybe you don't want to go so far as to say what our recommendation is, because that does start getting into explaining things in individual emails. But I think you can say how it came to be on our agenda.
Well, one of the people was looking for it on the website. Is it something that could be posted on the website so people could read?
I think after it's been transmitted to the village, maybe, but
the village board. Because you don't. This is my fear. Is like I don't want to have like, and you know, I don't necessarily want versions out there either.
Yeah. No, I agree.
You know, I wanted to reflect our final. This is a tough issue, right? So So I think we should take it. I think we need to consider every angle, but also make sure that they're getting the benefit of, again, our final kind of document. But I hear you in terms of sending some sort of email to all, you know, people that have made public comment. And I could certainly craft that and I just would want to get it approved by, you know, I can send it to you guys, but then I think I also want to make sure I get it approved by by Lisa, you know, and potentially Kathy, just to make sure that I'm not saying it. I don't want to set precedent, quite frankly, because if
that's true.
Comment is coming in for other commissions, does that set a bar that
not? Yeah, that's true. I don't know about all that stuff, so I'll let you handle that with John and Kathy.
Yeah,
Lisa, who's the Lisa you referred to?
Lisa Shiner, who's the acting village administrator now that Eric Palm has moved to Hoffman Estates. And Charlotte, I want to acknowledge your chat, because I do think that's another thing to consider, right? That yes, there is a health consideration for these workers, but also there is a a employment issue for these workers as well. So and that's why it's not a black and white issue. It's a complex thing completely. So thank you for putting that out there. And I don't know if you saw that, Charlotte, you also said that your environmental club recently did a drawing for free composting. So that might also be something that Carrie, you know, again, maybe that, you know, the students can help with as well. But you did it through Oak Park composting or through River Forest or both?
The drawing was for both Oak Park and River Forest, but an Oak Park resident one.
Okay. So if it was then a River Forest resident, you would have had to like fulfill it differently than Oak Park.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So there's your expertise. You have Beth who's done these things, and now we have Charlotte. Okay. So thank you. I know that it's actually now almost 9 o'clock. So we did definitely go over our 90-minute mark. I thank you for kind of persevering till the bitter end. I know that we had some casualties along the way, people that couldn't make it to the end. I will report back on the email thing. I will actually look into home rule versus non-home rule. I will strengthen, I'll add a sentence about our commitment to carbon neutrality, which is actually kind of the reason why we have our mission. I will add in the health and well-being of workers and public health as other mitigating factors. Okay.
You did a great job on that letter, and those comments will just enhance it.
No, thank you. No, I appreciate it. And I was a little nervous when we started, like, this is the first time ever, like, we've had like public comments coming in that I know of. I mean, we've had public guest speakers, but this was, I think, a different thing. So
I consider it a good thing. I mean, people are aware of us, and
it should be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I'm glad that they're engaged and they're passionate. I want to make sure that we're also respectful of all the different points of view that will inevitably come out of, you know, come with any ongoing dialogue on this issue. Okay.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, everyone. Have a great night.
Okay.
So we have to make a motion to
Motion to adjourn.
A motion. Okay, we already second. Got this. Motion second. One. A motion. Eric, you second. You first, you second, we're done.
Good night.
Good night,
everybody. Bye.